City Current. Produced by Dakota Media Access. In-depth discussion with Bismarck and Mandan city officials. Watch on Government Access Channel 602 HD or tune in to Radio Access 102.5 FM. Always local, always current.
Welcome to a Bismarck edition of City Current. We're here in the studios at Dakota Media Access, and it's Wednesday, August 28th. It's hard to believe that it's that far along in the summer.
September is around the corner.
Yeah, so, and I'm here, I'm Mary Van Sickle with Dakota Media Access. I'm here with Jason Tomanek from the City of Bismarck.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for having me today.
Welcome, welcome. So it was a pretty jam-packed agenda. Didn't look very busy on paper, but it turned into a fairly decent
discussion
meeting.
last night. Yeah.
Lots going on, and that's our purpose, is to always be here on Wednesday mornings after the City Commission meets and talk a little bit about what happened last night. So
I sometimes tell people this is the Cliff's Notes version of the City Commission meeting from the night before.
There you go. So. Although those meetings are always archived on our website at dakotamediaaccess.org, so you can watch them back a few years if you want to go back and watch some of these commission meetings as well as other meetings. So, but talking about the recent activity of last night. And there was one item on the consent agenda that we wanted to pull off and talk about, even though the commission did not pull it out. And it was an introduction for design standards for right-of-way and roadway. It came from Ben Arith's department.
Community Development.
And they have been working on this for a little while. So it was basically a call for a public hearing, which means in a couple weeks it will come back on the agenda for a public hearing, a little more detail and give people an opportunity to comment. But we wanted to talk about it a little bit. And driving this is a lot of the new developments happening in the residential area. And what we're going to talk about is design standards for residential properties, not
primarily
commercial properties.
Right. Yeah, we're talking about neighborhood streets, essentially what it is.
Yeah. So. A lot of new developments coming in. This just gives developers some options to look at. Rather than our standard road design and width of boulevard and street, this gives them some options to look at that will be allowed in the future. And it really kind of focuses on the width of the street is the primary issue. Boulevards change a little bit as
Slightly. Sidewalks are standard in residential areas, 4.5 feet for a sidewalk. So when we talk about right-of-way, I think it's fair to mention that what the right-of-way really encompasses. And in most cases, it's the sidewalk on both sides of the street. It's also the boulevard. Sometimes people call that the berm. And then, of course, the roadway. And in a lot of cases, that is all held together in about 66 feet of right-of-way. On busier or bigger streets, it's 80 feet of right-of-way. But as we're seeing now with some of the proposals, that right-of-way can actually be reduced if the street width is reduced as well.
Yeah.
So in some ways, it's being responsive to developers' requests for more flexibility, but also recognizing that in many cases, narrower streets are actually safer streets. It seems counterintuitive. We always hear people say, oh, the streets should be wider, they should be safer. Unfortunately, wider streets sometimes equal higher traffic speeds. With a narrower street, you're less inclined to go too fast in a residential neighborhood. So, but cost is certainly a part of this as well.
And maintenance of the street in the long term.
Absolutely.
Could be, some
we
cost
always,
savings.
We always need to be talking about maintenance. And for us as the city, snow removal, street maintenance, crack repair, billet overlay, all of that is part of the maintenance.
Another element that was discussed was the curbs themselves. I mean, we're all used to the standard rise curb. But mountable curbs are now included as an option in these in the three optional designs that were presented. You can also use a standard curb or mountable curbs, which mountable means basically just a slanted curb that doesn't have the dramatic vertical
90-degree
uplift
angle. And so mountable curbs, there are neighborhoods, particularly in Northeast Bismarck, that already have mountable curb. Couple advantages to pros and cons to both. In traditional standard curb, oftentimes you'll see that in most parts of the neighborhood or most parts of Bismarck. One of the features that is helpful with standard curb is stormwater. You know, with, when we're talking about stormwater running down the street,
keeps it in place.
Keeps it in place. It keeps it in the curb line. It gets it to the inlets. in a mountable curb situation, sometimes that stormwater can overtop the curb and end up being part of the boulevard as well. And in some cases, that's it's not terrible, but it's also not necessarily desired. But perhaps from the developer's perspective, with mountable curb, the advantage there is you only have to put the curb in one time. And in other words, when we as the city, when we go in and build a brand new street, one of the first things that we're doing is putting the curb and gutter in place, and we're using standard curb.
Right.
When the driveways and the homes come in those residential areas, the developers are actually having to remove that brand new curb, put a driveway in place, and then re-pour the curb.
Okay.
With mountable curb, it is essentially the driveway as well.
Sure, it does double duty. It's already in place wherever it ends up being placed.
Right, so then you're paving the apron or the flared part beyond the sidewalk, and then, of course, your driveway up to the home. So
either one of these curbs are allowed with the new design standards in residential areas. And then Ben's department also presented three different options then. And option A was the 38-foot width.
Mm-hmm.
And that is basically where we're at now.
Right.
Okay.
That's probably the widest option. And in most residential areas, in the newer parts of town, that's a fairly standard design.
Sure.
So you end up with parking on both sides of the street.
Okay.
And, of course, two lanes of traffic. You have a standard boulevard width, and of course, as we mentioned, the sidewalk width as well.
And then option B has a 32-foot street.
Mm-hmm.
And does the boulevards change in option B?
I believe the boulevards are all a standard 6.5 or 7 feet. And the desire there is a couple of reasons. Number one, more snow storage. So as the plows come through in the winter, they have more area to park the snow. But then also a wider boulevard affords the opportunity of a much larger shade tree, a full canopy tree, similar to what you'd see in
Avenue C,
the Cathedral District. You get these beautiful arching elm trees. On a narrower boulevard, the tree results are smaller, more ornamental trees, not necessarily those large shade trees.
Yeah.
So then we have the third option, which is the narrowest of the street widths, and that's the 26-foot option. And we're talking about curb face to curb face. That's the measurement, 26 feet. And in the 26-foot street design, you would have parking on only one side.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be similar to some of the streets that we see in and around the older parts of town, closer to downtown. In some cases, you've got narrower street widths. But 26 feet is a good number for residential uses. It's a good number for police and fire. They can move their equipment through there when people are parked on the street. So it's not that these designs are in any way unsafe. I mean, everybody's looked at these from the city's perspective, and this makes a lot of sense.
And this is, again, this is for new development coming in.
Right.
There's no plans
We're
to
not
change
retrofitting
anybody's
old neighborhoods or anything like that.
This would be new development that's coming in. It just gives the developers more options.
Absolutely.
For street widths and certainly curb options as well. So 2 weeks, it'll be back on the agenda for a public hearing.
September 10th. Yep.
All right.
And for anybody that's paying attention to the Planning and Zoning Commission meetings, they would have seen this there first because most of the community development work comes through Planning and Zoning Commission and then ends up as the City Commission in the form of a recommendation.
Okay. Sounds good. Moving on to the regular agenda, it started out, Commissioner Marquardt provided a report of his portfolios, and which is fairly standard. Most meetings you have a commissioner or the mayor talk about their portfolios. But his focus last night was on a couple areas, and that was fire department and public works primarily. And the fire department's had some new activity going out there that's kind of interesting and fun. One of the things that he talked about was a partnership with Public Works where they built a structural collapse device for their training, and they helped Public Works help build it. It's out of concrete. We've got a picture on our screen right now. It doesn't look like concrete. It looks more like a PVC pipe, or as you called it, a hamster maze.
Hamster maze,
yeah. Looks like.
So this is, it's essentially salvaged concrete conduit from stormwater pipes, and then also there are concrete slabs that were reclaimed from a local business that rebuilt their parking lot. So what this does is it affords the firefighters an opportunity to train in a very real situation. Structural collapse is an area that one of the fire stations specializes in. This will give them some training that they just can't get in the classroom.
Yeah.
So the location of this is at the Miriam Fire Station, which we call Station 4. It's the newest station on the east side of town. That entire facility is 5 acres, And this is part of that 5-acre site. So it's directly adjacent to the burn building where they can also have live burn training and demonstrations.
And rappelling and
rappelling
other things
and
that
all
do.
Sorts of rescue-ish situations. So this is another added opportunity for our first responders to be safe and be trained and do
and
great things.
I think that deserves to be mentioned that this is a regional training facility.
Correct.
It isn't just Bismarck firefighters that are using this. There are other Mandan, Morton County, all these different groups are coming in from Dickinson probably.
Chief Baseflug talked about regional support and memorandums of understanding and support that there will always be that.
Yeah.
Cross the river
That's
support if necessary. So,
and those recycled pavement pieces are the vertical pieces that you see in there. And basically, the firefighter will move through this tunnel, army crawl, as you will, and get to that vertical obstacle and have to chip through that. Then those are removed as they're broken through, and we've got a you've got a little backfill there. Mm-hmm. You can
some replacement parts.
Yeah.
No,
use
I think it's
recycled
it's
materials
fantastic.
To make it happen. So that's kind of cool. Also for the fire department was the addition of self-contained breathing apparatus units for all firefighters who could be potentially on a site fighting a fire.
In a live fire situation.
And this gives them the ability to see in smoke-filled structure.
Thermal imaging, I believe, is part of it. But yes, so it's all brand new breathing apparatuses, the oxygen tanks and the masks. But then there's also a device that goes along with that that has a readout of the temperature of the fire and then also what's within those facilities ahead of them.
Wow.
So it's one more tool for our firefighters to be as safe as they can, but also, try and save as many lives as possible.
Pretty high tech stuff.
It is. It's tremendous.
It's really cool. Well, anything that increases their safety is going to be great for the community. Here's a pile of them on the screen. That's a lot of equipment, and I'm sure it's pretty valuable stuff.
It comes at a price. Yeah, that is definitely equipment worth investing in, but we know that the firefighters are going to take great care of it. They're going to get the longest life they can out of it, and this is one more tool that they need to do the job that they have.
Cool. That's great. And moving on to Public Works, under Commissioner Marquardt's reports, he talked a little bit about some of the water main replacement work that's going on in the community. And I think we have a couple of pictures Ben can throw up, too. This first one's kind of dramatic.
This is kind of a staggering image, right? Yeah. So this is a piece of the pipe that was taken out of the ground. That's an old cast iron pipe. And for those that have the screen in front of them, they can see the corrosion. And really what it's doing is it's limited the capacity, the flow rate of the water. It's restricted that. So that's an old cast iron pipe that came out of the ground. It'll be replaced with the shiny new blue PVC pipe.
Mm-hmm.
For anybody that drove on Divide Avenue over the last 5-6 weeks, they likely saw some of this material staged on the street. So this project...
And it went through the neighborhood south of Divide and be east
by
of
Arrowhead
the Y.
And Good Shepherd Church in that area. So I believe it was over a quarter mile of new water main that was put in that neighborhood. So definitely some good work going on there.
Kind of the ongoing work of Public Works. And every summer they have a designated area they go after and
absolutely.
Get this stuff replaced.
We've got a capital improvements plan looking at old infrastructure and updating it, repairing
it.
Doesn't
last forever.
Unfortunately, no, it doesn't.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Moving on into an item that a lot of people were watching and interested in, and this is, and you and I have talked about this for the last few times we've been together, is this Highway 83, the potential for the Costco company to move in their facility up there.
Right.
That moved forward. Everything's moving forward now, and we can look at potentially this time next year they could possibly be open or very close to
it. My understanding is they'd like to get construction going early next year and have their doors open in the fall.
And there were two items on the agenda related to this project. And the first one was a development agreement with Costco. And it really had to do with major traffic flow improvements in and out of this area.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. So for us, traffic safety is primary concern. And obviously we've got a corridor here with Highway 83 or State Street, whichever you prefer to call it. High volumes of traffic at high rates of speed. So what do we as the city need to do to make sure that all the intersections are as safe as possible? And the graphic on the screen right now is demonstrating those types of improvements. Really, what are we talking about here? We're talking about streetlights, traffic signals, turn lanes, and water and sewer as well. I mean, that'll be to service the Costco facility. But from our perspective, we're looking at the types of improvements we'll need to make to Brookside Lane, to State Street, and also to 57th Avenue to make sure that people are able to get in and out of there as safely as possible. The closest thing that I would reference is the last phase of State Street that was improved, and that's closer to the Hay Creek Shops area, mm-hmm. the intersection with LaSalle Avenue.
Sure.
So if you remember, at one point, it was just a two-lane section of Highway 83. Well, now we've got a much more robust intersection with turn lanes, traffic signals, all of those things. That's very similar to what you'll see here with the Costco development. And it would be similar to what we see as we continue to go up, the largest sure. commercial corridor in Bismarck.
Yeah, been a lot of growth even on 57th Avenue with the car dealerships obviously up there first. Now we have the new high school up mm-hmm. there. Lots of traffic coming in and out on 57th. So these improvements, and as I understand, the city has the $2 million, $2.1
million. $2.1 is the city's.
And Costco picks up the
portion,
other two.
And the $2 million will go to Costco. The mm-hmm. $2.1 million for the city will come from existing sales tax collections, which has been the standard operating procedure for mm-hmm. other like projects in the past. So this is one way that we're choosing to support growth even on the north side mm-hmm. of the community. There's well, a number of different ways the city helps with development,
sure.
and this is how we're helping on the north side.
And I think it should be mentioned that while these improvements are being put in place because of this Costco project, there's a lot of other potential beneficiaries of these.
Absolutely.
This was going to happen regardless of who was the tenant there. Mm-hmm. And we've got other properties to the east of this property that are now potentially ripe for development, as well as to the north.
Right.
So that there's others that are benefiting from this new configuration
yes.
and the investment that we're making here. So it's interesting.
As 57th is improved, as Brookside is improved, those are two east-west roadways that are essentially parallel. They'll ultimately connect with 19th Street.
Mm-hmm.
And 19th Street will function, the term we use is a backage road. You know, frontage road, that was kind of a common thing in the 60s and 70s and 80s. We've learned that they're not the most effective or efficient way. So now we look at backage roads, which essentially are about a quarter mile off of the main roadway, and it parallels the roadway. So once 19th Street is connected, you'll be able to travel 19th from Divide Avenue all the way up to 71st Avenue.
I think that would be a good north-south connector.
It'll take some relief
yes.
off State Street.
And 71st Avenue.
Those north-south
Absolutely.
Corridors, we understand, are terribly critical.
Mm-hmm.
However, we do wait for development to encourage the construction of those roadways.
Yep.
So this is another opportunity.
I thought it was interesting last night to the discussion about Brookside Lane. When you will be exiting out on Brookside Lane, you will not be able to turn south.
Correct.
You will only be able to turn right and then have to to the north, so and figure out your plan from there. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's kind of interesting. But I understand yeah. it. That because a left turn there would be very difficult.
It would be problematic,
yeah.
and without the high volume of traffic coming off Brookside Lane, there's no merit for a traffic signal.
Yeah,
the
I
other
can
concern
see that.
Is we've got to have adequate spacing between traffic signals, and that ideal spacing is about a quarter mile. I don't think we've got quite a quarter mile, so it shows how we're adapting to some of the old roadway network, but yet still trying to make improvements to make it as safe and efficient
yeah.
as possible.
So this moved through. Commissioner Oban did vote no on this particular item, but it did move through
mm-hmm.
4-1. So we could look again, maybe in a year from now, they're close to opening.
Yeah, we'll be doing design work for the roadway improvements with the intent of getting that out early 2020 for bid, and then
mm-hmm.
construction as soon as we can in the spring.
That should be.
So look for some changes.
Interesting. Also related to this, obviously the next item on the agenda was the annexation of this
mm-hmm.
property into the city. And that was a public hearing.
Right.
You did have a couple of residents from Brookside Lane who have lived on that area for
mm-hmm.
quite some time talk about that.
Right.
They weren't necessarily objecting. They just had some concerns that they want to make
mm-hmm.
sure that are paid attention to.
Yeah. And understandably, with development in the neighborhood, with the Hay Creek Shops changes and some of the other things
mm-hmm.
that have happened there, they are seeing some things that are different than they had seen in years past. I think it's fair to mention that we as a city typically do not forcibly annex properties unless we can provide services. And when we say that, we mean water and sewer and police and fire and garbage
sure.
and all of the things that the city does. You know, will these homes at some point be torn out or raised or, you know, redeveloped. It's possible, but it wouldn't be anything that the city would force. It would be on those property owners to decide, do we want to continue to live here or do we want to perhaps band together, sell all their land to one individual? I guess I don't know. That's in their hands.
Yeah. You'd need a crystal ball for
Right. But we understand that change can be difficult.
Sure.
And, you know, complete respect to the people that have raised families there, lived there for decades. We understand that that's your home.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, the world around them has changed.
Yeah.
And it's just a result of growth in our community.
And other than that, that was the only part, that was the only public testimony that I can recall from last night. So that's moved through as well.
Right. Yeah. It was approved
as well.
So the property for Costco has officially been annexed.
Though we probably won't talk about it until the bids are coming out and maybe early next year and maybe see how that is all working.
Yeah. For the most part, you know, the information to share with the public is just now, just what we've offered. So everything else at this point will be design work and getting ready for the next step early next spring.
Sounds good. Also on the regular agenda last night, University of Mary asked for a lease extension. This would be the second lease extension that they have requested, and this would be the property across from the event center just to the north.
Right, the current public health facility.
Yeah, yeah.
So we've, four years ago, we had entered into a purchase agreement with the University of Mary. The intent was to buy the land and potentially redevelopment as a downtown campus site. They've done a little bit of investigation into the site. There's a phase two environmental report that they've received. Our indication is that there was some diesel noted in the ground, not of high concern or concentration, but the university asked for some more time to look into that phase two environmental report, which is understandable. But also, as our city attorney mentioned last night, we're talking about an area that was adjacent to the railroad tracks and a very active rail corridor. We know that years ago, the roundhouse was sitting there. So for diesel to be in the ground, I don't know that it's a complete surprise because that's part of the railroad. But I think we also need to say that we're not talking about the size of diesel that Mandan experienced years ago. There weren't filling tanks and, you know, millions of gallons leaked in. We're not talking about that size and scale, but it is something that the university wants to consider. The commissioners agreed. Go right ahead. So there's a, I believe it's a 90-day extension on the purchase agreement. And then we're also talking about they still would like to have students in there yet this fall. Their classes start right after Labor Day. So we're looking at some potential lease arrangements to get students into the building quickly.
All right.
So
that moved through, and we'll probably hear back again when they come back at the end of 90 days.
At the next decision point. Right.
Okay. Also on the agenda was a discussion from Gabe Schell, I believe, on the I-94 interchange, the one that intersects with Centennial exit 161.
Right.
That was an interesting discussion. We want to talk about that. And we're way far in front of this thing. This is just the first blush on this whole project, potential project.
Right. And the DOT is looking at a reconstruction of that interchange. And what does that look like? What does the shape become? How does it better move traffic more safely? But as many of us know, that is a tremendously busy interchange with the truck stop right there. You've got all the traffic coming off Centennial.
All the new
development. From the northeast side, it is a very...
And more to come.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the DOT is looking out 5 years from now, and they'd like to hear from the city. What are your thoughts? Do you have concerns? Traffic movement? Of course, we've got a fire station just south of there, and that would be the primary roadway the fire department would use for any responses north of the interstate. So these are the types of things that we need to bring to the table to say, we can't just close this down, but how do we work through construction and still have access and traffic movement?
As I understand, it was the DOT who brought it, who invited the city of Bismarck to the discussion as the standard procedure, I would assume. So again, this is just starting. There's going to be, once this moves forward, there will be design options more than likely.
More than likely,
there'll be a lot of public meetings. That will happen, and as you said, maybe we're 4 years out, could be even longer. But these are all these projects move.
Right.
Yeah.
Things just don't happen overnight. So we certainly appreciate the opportunity to comment and share our perspective.
Well, and the recognition that this intersection is congested, and there's some issues there, as we were talking earlier. There's rarely any time you're in that area that there isn't traffic sitting on top of that bridge. So. Yeah, it definitely needs attention, so it's good to see. And the commission voted unanimously. Move it forward.
Support
Let's
it.
Just talk.
Yep.
That's all it is at this point. There's no contribution from the city at this level. It's just staff time.
Just getting started.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Because the design could extend further into beyond the intersection itself, which would be the state department mm-hmm. taking care of that financially. If the city wants more improvements, either north or south, mm-hmm. that would be the city's responsibility.
Right. Yep.
Okay. Sounds good. We wanted to mention, we're going off the agenda right now, but we did want to mention the budget process is still happening
still
for the
alive.
City.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you will introduce the preliminary budget on September 10th.
Right. At our next meeting. And so then the action will be to call for the hearing, which would be September 24th. So if there's anyone from the community that has comments, good, bad, or otherwise, mm-hmm. on our 2020 budget proposal, your opportunity to address the commission will be on September 24th, but also on the September 10th agenda, the full budget will be included. It's already available from one of our past meetings when they had the preliminary introduction.
Sure.
So the information is there. What we know is that the budget cannot increase at this time, but it can decrease. So the commissioners tentatively approved what we were looking at for 2020.
As a maximum. Yeah.
That number could go down
on
the 24th of September.
And that is all available on your website,
Absolutely.
Through the agendas. But again, the preliminary budget will be introduced September 10th.
Okay. You got it.
Sounds good. Just a quick update on some road projects that have been going on over the summer. We've talked about the water main replacements. But a new process has been used this summer that hadn't been used before called a scrub seal.
Right.
And this was to replace... this was to extend the life of existing asphalt areas mm-hmm. that may have had to go undergone a complete renovation.
Complete renovation. We call it a total reconstruct, where it would go down to the mm-hmm. subgrade, or a mill and overlay, which is where they grind off the top few inches of the asphalt and then come back and lay new asphalt in place. So on the monitors, for those that have it, they can see it. But for those that are listening on the radio, we can try and describe. So the process for the scrub seal, it's essentially some specialized equipment that comes in with a slurry or an emulsion, which is a petroleum-based product. Tar, for the most part, is what it looks mm-hmm. like. It comes out of a truck in a hot liquid form, and then behind the truck is a trailer system that has a series of brushes, and the intent is for those brushes to help work that petroleum emulsion deep into the cracks that are already on the roadway surface, and right behind that equipment comes the chip seal, which is what we're used to seeing on most of our asphalt surfaces mm-hmm. already. The chip seal is effectively that hard armor on top of the asphalt that will help protect it from just general traffic and, of course, snow plows.
Yeah.
So in a couple different parts of the community, North Central Bismarck, around the Holman Acres neighborhood, those are the outer space streets, that area of town was done. And then another small portion of Northeast Bismarck in the Sattler Sunrise neighborhood was done as well. So some really great pictures of what this looks like from our engineering department while they're out inspecting and supervising.
And you did send a video as well, and maybe we could watch that video too. It's kind of fascinating to see how that equipment works and the process that it goes through here as you described it.
There's the application of the hot emulsion. You can see the brushes helping to work it down into the cracks, and just moments behind that is the piece of equipment that delicately lays the chip seal right in place. It's kind of a fascinating piece of equipment, but I actually live in one of the neighborhoods where this is done, mm-hmm. and I'm really anxious to see how it lasts over the next 3 to 5, maybe even more years than that, because the intent is to extend the life of the street, but then also, as a homeowner for special assessments, they're a little bit less because we're not doing a total reconstruction of the street. This is a much more affordable way to extend that pavement life.
Okay.
So
you'll be out there every year with a little measuring stick.
I have direct access to the city engineer, and he and I have talked about this a lot. So it's going to be fun to watch this evolve. If this is a process that truly extends the street life, I think mm-hmm. we'll see more and more of this as we go forward.
I do believe the city of Mandan also is doing a process over there this summer as well.
Okay.
So,
it's another tool in the chest, as mm-hmm. they say.
So. Absolutely. Well, thanks for being here. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
I'll be back.
All right.
Thanks, Mary.
Jason. And thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.
For more information on what was discussed in this episode of City Current, visit bismarcknd.gov or call 701-355-1300. If you have suggestions, comments, or issues you would like addressed in future episodes, contact us at info@freetv.org. This program airs on Government Access, Channel 2 and 602 in HD, or on Radio Access 102.5 FM. It's also available as a podcast on radioaccess.org and as a video viewing link at freetv.org. Thanks for tuning in to this edition of City Current.